All right. So, hello everyone. My name is Angelica Serna, and there I am. So I am the Regional Program Officer for the Western Hemisphere Fulbright Scholar Program, meaning I work on the U.S. Scholar Program primarily, as well as some of my time is spent on the Visiting Scholar Program, which is a separate program to bring scholars from other countries in the Western Hemisphere to the U.S. But today, we will focus on the questions that you may have about applying and participating in the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. So I do have a little bit of background information. I'll keep it brief, as we do want to be able to get to any and all of your questions that you may have. So I have a few slides, and then we will open it up to questions. So this slide shows you the eligibility for U.S. Scholar Programs. You are required to have U.S. citizenship, and dual citizenship may or may not be permitted based on the country that you're applying for. And you can find all of that information on the catalog of awards. I know, for example, Canada does not allow dual citizenship, and Brazil has some special cases depending on the award, so that's something to look out for. The degree is required by the award. Generally, a PhD or another terminal degree may be required. A lot of awards are open to applicants with a master's, and also professionals with expertise in their area. So again, these are all things that you'll want to look for in the catalog of awards. One thing to note is that if you're a recent master's degree recipient or undergraduate degree, you are most likely eligible for the Fulbright U.S. Student Program, so that's something to keep in mind. There's also some teaching experience as required by the award if you are applying for a teaching or a teaching research award, and we can go through, I'll show you on the catalog of awards some of the different options. We also encourage anyone who has served in the U.S. Armed Forces to apply, and yeah, we can show you a little bit more in the next few slides. So, I'm going to switch out really quickly to show you the catalog of awards. Give me just 1 minute. All right, so hopefully you're all familiar with the catalog of awards by now. This is the main page. You can filter here by different options. So because this is Western Hemisphere focused, I'm going to go and filter by the Western Hemisphere region. You can click Search All Awards. And you can, I like to look at it as a list. It's a little bit easier for me to see all of the awards. You are also able to filter by discipline, for example, the activity, the grant length, degree requirement, etc. I'll leave it broad just for now. So when you filter by region, you can see the country and the activity. Teaching, teaching and research, some are research only, so you'll want to be paying attention to what kind of award you would want to apply for. So, for example, the Fulbright Canada Distinguished Research Chair at Carleton University is a research-only award. So that's one thing to look out for. So if we click into, for example, the Bahamas All Disciplines, the first thing I want you to note is that there are four tabs up here that each contain different information for you. So the award details will give you information about the length, the dates, which location. The University of the Bahamas is the only institution available for this award, but depending on the country and the type of award, it may be open. Some information here, and over here on the right-hand side, it'll give you about the number of grants. So there's one grant available for the Bahamas, and you can do research or a combination of teaching and research. So for the Bahamas, there is no opportunity to do teaching only. This one is open to all level of scholars, including early career. So if we go to the award requirements over here, it'll tell you open to academics and appropriately qualified professionals outside of academia. There is a preference for applicants with a PhD in at least 1 year of teaching experience. So that's what we would consider an early career doctoral applicant. So that is a brief overview. You can also look at the award benefits. This is just some standard information about the stipend, what you can receive, and then a country area overview is really helpful to know more about the priorities that the country has for a given year. It'll tell you about the university, the mission, etc. This is driven by the embassies and the Fulbright commissions in the country, and so this is really useful to look at when you're considering developing a project and a project statement and seeing if it's in line with the priorities of the country. So this is very useful. I highly encourage you to go through, and like I said, there are many more filters over here for how for selecting the country and the award type that you would like. So I'll go back to the PowerPoint. So here I just want to talk a little bit about selecting the right award. So once you go through the catalog of awards and you review and decide where you'd like to go and the length of time and the type of proposal, you want to be sure that you're matching your expertise and your experience to the award description. So you want to make sure that it's a good fit. Being sure to look for any language requirements that countries may have. In the Western Hemisphere, many of the Spanish-speaking countries do have requirements for intermediate language ability. There's also discipline preferences that are listed in the award, so you'll want to go through and read through very carefully. Sometimes in the all disciplines, for example, they'll list that any appropriate discipline is accepted. However, they have a preference for environmental sciences or public health, those sorts of details, and so that would help make your application a little more competitive. Finally, you also want to be sure to very clearly indicate the relevance of the project to the country. So why Canada? Why Brazil? Why Argentina? Why is this host country going to benefit from your project? And really make a strong justification for why you need to go there as opposed to staying in the United States and doing it from your home institution. And finally, as I mentioned before, the career level is really important. So we have specific postdoc awards. Distinguished Chair Awards are going to be for those with more experience, and there are some early career awards as well. So we do have the application components. There's an application form with all of your demographic data, a project statement, which is really the meat of the application. So this is where you're going to outline exactly what you're going to do, how you plan on doing it, who you will be working with and collaborating with, and then what the impact will be. You'll also want to include a CV or resume, 3 letters of reference, and then depending on the award, though there may be additional components such as a course outline or syllabi, which is required for any teaching awards. You'll want to include a bibliography for research-only awards, and then if there is a requirement for language proficiency, the catalog of awards will specify whether or not you need to submit an external language proficiency report or not. The same goes for letter of invitations that will be specified on the award. And then supplemental materials for applicants in arts, architecture, writing, and journalism, etc. All of these details are award specific, so you'll definitely want to go back and make sure that you're reading very carefully each of the awards that you're interested in. So this is about your project statement. Again, you want to talk about why Fulbright, focus on what you plan to do. Also, make sure to clearly describe the outcomes from the grant. What impact will it have on the host institution, your host country, your home institution, and you as well professionally and personally. Another important thing to speak to is how adaptable you are. How well will you deal with challenging situations? You will be going abroad for a number of months, and we want to ensure that you will be successful in any of the situations that may come up while we are abroad. So many awards do require or prefer that you identify your own affiliation and secure a letter of invitation by the time that you apply. So the specifics of this, again, can be found under the catalog of awards. Sometimes the post or the commission can help secure a host institution or affiliation for you, or they can connect you. They're definitely open to having this conversation. If you need any assistance identifying appropriate hosts and beginning those conversations, that is a possibility as well. One thing to note is that letters of invitation are non-binding expressions of interest from your proposed host abroad. So it should come from the person with whom you'll be collaborating, and it should be on host institutional letterhead, but it's, again, non-binding, and so this is more of a starting point for discussion as to who you would work with should you be awarded a Fulbright. So to submit a competitive application, you want to be sure to address the Fulbright goal of promoting mutual understanding. This is the basis of the Fulbright program. It's for you to have an exchange with another country. So why are you interested in your Fulbright? Why are you interested in your proposed host country? How will there be bidirectionality and benefits for both you, your home institution, and your host institution? And you can describe the professional expertise and skills you can offer, etc. There's also an important component of cultural diplomacy and demonstrating, again, like I previously said, flexibility and adaptability. So here's a brief overview of the review process and timeline. This year, if we have any reapplicants on the webinar, the deadline has been pushed back to September 16th. So that's an extension of about a month and a half to allow anybody in education to get everything together by the beginning of the fall semester and really have the full summer to prepare your application materials. So after the deadline, we conduct technical review for completeness, ensuring that you are eligible, all of the application materials are in. Then it goes to a peer review process between October and November, where we have committees of reviewers looking at the feasibility and strength of each application. And around December, applicants are notified of their status, whether or not you were recommended to move forward. And finally, between January and April, there are several other levels of review, but around this time, we hope to notify grantees of who has been selected or not selected. And then beginning in May, right about now, we begin collecting all the documents and signing grant documents and really preparing for your time abroad. So this page shows the application resources. So if you go to our website, there are a number of resources. We really try to make it as easy as possible for you to have a seamless experience while you're applying. So there are different ways to look at the application, specific instructions, there's guidelines, project statement guidance, there's some samples that you can look at, as well as many webinars that we have conducted and will continue to conduct from now until very near the application deadline. So I encourage you to look at all of those resources. So that was an overview, and now we can open it up to the Q&A. All right, so we have a few questions here, and I'll go through them one by one. There's a few questions about whether this presentation will be available online, and this is being recorded, and it will be archived and available probably in the next week or so. All right, so there is a question about finding a host institution. If you are unable to find your own host institution, then I encourage you to reach out to us at westhem@iie.org. There's also links to the embassy websites or commission websites with sometimes specific contact information so that they can begin the process of helping you find affiliates. A lot of the posts in the commission do have existing relationships with many of the higher ed institutions in their countries, and so they will more than likely be able to give you some leads in terms of connecting with an affiliate. So next question. So there's a question about veterans, and it's asking, this person's asking if there's a formal preference in some kind of project rating system, like points added in a rubric. This is not necessarily part of the rubric, but it is something that is taken into consideration during the review panels and the peer review panels to take into account that experience of you as a veteran. So you definitely would like, we encourage you to speak to that in the application and also list it as part of the demographic data so that we can be aware of that. So there's a question here about obtaining a letter of invitation. So let me go back to the letter of invitation slide and I can speak to that. All right, so on this slide, this is about host institutions and letter of invitations. So again, if a host is pre-identified for you, you'll find that in the catalog of awards. So for example, the Mexico TEFL award, they pre-identify your placement. So you will not need to find a host institution or secure a letter of invitation when you are applying. And the reason for that is that for the TEFL award, it's based on need in country. And so after a person is selected, after you go through the process, then you will find out where you will be placed. So in that situation, you will not need to worry about finding a host institution. For other awards, letters of invitation are required. And so you want to identify a host. We do have a lot of resources available for you. To begin, we recommend going to the international office on your campus. We have a really useful Fulbright Scholar directory, which I can show you how to use closer to the end of this presentation. And then review the award description for suggested hosts or resources. So very frequently, the catalog of awards will say, scholars generally work with these three host institutions. We recommend that you reach out to X person, and then they provide the email. So it's definitely important for you to go through and look at the resources already provided so that you don't feel like you have to start just cold calling people. There's also letter of invitation guidance, and this is linked here on this page, and so there's just more information, more resources about securing a letter of invitation once you have identified a host that you would like to work with and that they have accepted and are interested in working with you. There is a question here about an age limit. There is not an age limit. Our participants run the gamut from postdoc, early career, if the award allows for that. We have the participation of professors emeritus, and so there's no real age limit. I think it's going to depend on the strength of your project and your proposal, and that's not something that's looked at. It's not part of the review criteria. So we encourage everyone who is eligible to apply. So, another question here, a U.S. citizen teaching at a Canadian university, am I eligible to apply for a Fulbright at another Canadian university? So this eligibility question is going to depend on the length of time that you have spent outside of the U.S. So there is a limitation of if you have been outside of the U.S. for the last 5 out of 6 years, then you would be ineligible, and this is cumulative. So if you have been living in Canada, working at a Canadian university, for example, for 4 out of the past 6 years, then you would still be eligible. But if you hit that 5-year mark, you would need to wait and return to the United States to start over that time frame. So for any really specific questions that you're not sure of in terms of your eligibility, please do feel free to reach out to us. You can email us or call, and we can discuss those questions with you. The next question here is about having substantial experience in the host country. So I would say that it does not necessarily count against you. In a lot of instances, having experience will actually be a strength because it shows that you are familiar with the culture, you're familiar with hopefully the language, and that you're already using an existing network if you've had a lot of experience there. I would say to look at the catalog of awards again. That's what I will keep repeating. That's what we will tell you until the September 16th deadline. But for example, Brazil has a few awards where they do have a preference for people who don't have a lot of experience. And so whether that is a preference for that country, that award, you can find that in the catalog of awards. So here we have another question. If it's possible to apply for a Fulbright, if you're not currently in a degree program or are not affiliated with a home institution. So again, the catalog of awards will be able to indicate the requirements. So if you don't have a PhD, then I would encourage you to filter through or another terminal degree to filter on the catalog of awards, how for professional programs, professional projects. And so there are a handful of those that are pretty interesting, I think, and you would be able to apply without having an affiliated home institution. So there's a question about if Fulbright Commission officers are routinely working as matchmakers for scholars, I would say that not necessarily. We do offer a lot of resources and a lot of support so that you can find your own affiliations and kind of start your own lane. But the Fulbright Commission and the U.S. Embassy are available for you to in case you need to have a discussion or if you're unsure, if you have a certain unique situation, then we encourage you to do so. But we would prefer that you do some of the groundwork on your own. So the next question here, is there preference for a Fulbright in a country to stay in one institution or to visit different institutions for only research? Or for teaching research, or if there's any preference of one over the other. So what I would say is that first the preference would be indicated in the catalog of awards. And if it isn't, I would say that you should formulate your project statement and your project based on what is going to work best for you and based on the outcomes that you are trying to achieve. And so if it would serve your research interest to be visiting multiple institutions, then I would include that and speak to that. If it wouldn't benefit you in any clear way, then I would say maybe not to include that part of it. You will be selected based on your project statement, but once you are in country, things do change a little bit, and there's the flexibility for you to kind of change course a little bit based on what you find your project needs. So this question here is about Nicaragua. We sometimes have to close awards due to the political situations that are going on. Nicaragua is not currently open just because it's pretty unstable still. A lot of the public universities are closed down, and embassy staff have been advised to leave. So until that changes, we recommend looking at other countries in the area that may be a good fit for your project. So the next question is about a spouse being an academic. Are there programs for two applicants? For the Fulbright program, each individual person must apply on their own. So it wouldn't be possible to have a co-application or anything like that. You would both apply if that's what you wanted to do individually, and you would be reviewed separately, independently. There are cases where two family members, two spouses have been selected for the same country the same year, but that's not something that we take into consideration explicitly. Can I apply to more than one country and more than one university simultaneously? So the answer to this is no, you may not apply to more than one country. You are going to need to find the best country that matches your project and your program. Sometimes there are multiple universities in one country or one award. Canada, for example, if you look at some of their distinguished chair awards, offer 5 or 6 different potential universities that you could affiliate with. And in those cases, you can list ranked universities that you want to participate or work with. But as far as countries, no, unfortunately at this time you should select just one country and go from there. So the next question here about reference letters. So we do require letters of reference. There is not any specific criteria, but I will say that they carry a good amount of weight in the review process, and so you're going to want to be able to have references from people who can speak to your work and who know you well and who can really advocate for you in terms of your project and your ability to be adaptable overseas. There is a form, and they'll receive an online form when you identify your referees. They'll receive a form with questions and prompts for them to answer. So I would just recommend that it's somebody who knows you, knows your professional work, and can really speak to the benefit and the strengths that you will bring as part of the Fulbright program. So can you please elaborate on reporting requirements during and after the award period? So during, we do have a few reports, surveys that we collect, and depending on whether you will be in a Fulbright Commission country or if you will be in an embassy, we collect reports around the midway point, kind of asking how things are going, your satisfaction with the program, any feedback that might be helpful for future applicants, future Fulbright scholars, and then also final report. This may be different from any requirements that the host institution may ask you to submit, for example, and sometimes the Fulbright Commission may also require you to submit something at the end. But again, that will depend on each country. So there's a question here about summer programs. If there are summer programs so that one could complete the fellowship outside of the academic calendar. So again, my answer here is going to be to look at the catalog of awards. They do specify oftentimes as to when the grant should begin, whether it should be for one semester or two semesters, and whether or not flex is an option. So the flex option, many countries in the Western Hemisphere do offer this, and it is an opportunity for you to go 1 to 3 months at a time over several visits to really be able to accommodate your schedule. I will say that if it's a teaching-only award that you're applying for, it's probably going to have to be during the academic calendar year. So definitely look at those kinds of restrictions when you're applying. But it is possible that you could go during the summertime, especially if you are conducting research-only projects. So the next question, it's a two-part question. For research grants, how important is it that the country is the only place to access certain information versus information that could be conducted in multiple countries? So I'll address that first. For research grants, I would say that you're going to want to justify why one country. Since you do have to choose one country, it will be really important for you to be able to access that information there. But it doesn't have to be based on the research solely. So if there are networks of people that you want to be collaborating with, if there's a certain demographic of people, or if you're in the sciences, those sorts of details that may not necessarily have a direct bearing on your research, then those are things that you would want to include in your project statement. The second part of that question, do you have any suggestions for someone who is not an academic and does not have a PhD but does have a terminal degree? So I would encourage you to email us, and we can set up a 15-minute call to go through the awards that would be applicable to you based on your background. So the next question we have is about the flex schedule. So for this, I'm going to go to the award catalog of awards so that I can show you how it might look. So here we're on the catalog of awards again. You can filter by it, but I just want to show you by selecting any of the possibilities. So let's look at Costa Rica, the Costa Rican All Disciplines Award. We go into here, grant length, so 4 to 6 months. And again, here it'll indicate when they should begin, so July 2020 or later. Some countries, please note, do not offer flex options, but Costa Rica does. And so, like I was saying, it's designed for scholars who require multiple visits to the host country for whatever reason. And this is something that you would indicate at the time of application, whether you wanted to do a 6-month continuous award or a 6-month flex award. And so the stipulations are here. There's a minimum length of 4 months, maximum 6 months total. For any segment, it's 1 month minimum and 3 months maximum. So if you wanted to do 4 1-month segments, that would be a possibility. If you wanted to do 1 4-month segment and 1 2-month segment, that would also be a possibility. So it's based on what you propose, and this should be figured out ahead of time in collaboration with your host institution, as it will have to be feasible with their academic calendar and the work that you're proposing to do, etc. So again, look at the catalog of awards, and you'll find that information on this first tab. All right, so the next question that we have, all right, so there's a question here about a very specific project statement that they're considering. If you'd like to talk through your project and whether or not it would be feasible, we are more than happy to discuss with you. I would first recommend that if you want to brainstorm a project or a program, to really look through the catalog of awards carefully, especially that country area overview, so that you can see whether or not your project would be in alignment with the priorities of the country. After doing that, feel free to reach out and we can set up a call to discuss based on your background and your interest if what would be the best fit for you. So is it possible to connect with previous scholars? It is. So we actually have a really great resource that's called the Fulbright Scholar Directory. And we're going to pull that up for you to show you how it works. It's linked here. It's linked in the PowerPoint, but we'll double check that when we send this over to you. So if you go to the Fulbright Scholar website, which I hope you're familiar with, you can view the Fulbright Scholar directory. And so what this is a directory of all participants of the Fulbright Scholar program. And so I think it's really wonderful because you can filter by a number of data points. So if we're looking at a particular country, for example, you can search by country. So here we're searching for Costa Rica. And this will literally give you an alphabetized list of the scholar, the country that they went to, their specialization. It'll give you where their home institution was at the time of application or the time that they participated, as well as their host institution. So you can get an idea of the types of host institutions that have hosted and collaborated with scholars, meaning they're probably very well aware of the program and are pretty amenable to hosting future scholars. So if you're interested in somebody's background, for example, Tammy Gregerson here did a TEFL project, you can get the scholar information when you click in, and you'll also get to see the grant information. Most notably, you can see the project title and when they participated. So this doesn't necessarily give you their contact information, but it does give you enough information that you can do a quick Google search and probably find them, or LinkedIn. And I can tell you from experience that all of our Fulbright scholars are really wonderful and they're very open and willing to help any applicants. Their alumni are a really wonderful resource, so I do encourage you to use this when you are researching and designing your project proposal. Yeah, so we'll go back to the presentation. All right, these are some really great questions. So is there any disqualification or disadvantage in the case the applicant has a small existing research grant collaborating with the host institution? So again, this is probably going to be country dependent. I do encourage you to reach out to us with this question, but generally, if you have an existing network that you're leveraging when you're proposing your project statement, that's generally seen as an advantage because you already have a network, you already have people, you have kind of laid the groundwork for you to be able to continue your work. Now, if you don't have that at all, that's not to say that you are at a disadvantage either. It's just not going to be considered as a disadvantage for you to have done work in that country previously. So another question here is about the outcomes of the Fulbright. So in addition to publications coming out of the project, are there other types of scholarship output that is specifically valued by Fulbright? So here my answer would be that it's going to depend on your project. So if you're doing a project in the STEM field, that's going to have one type of output as opposed to a TEFL project. So I know that's not super helpful, but I think it's going to depend on what exactly you're looking for and what kind of impact you can have. So we're more looking for impact, not necessarily a concrete outcome such as a publication. That is generally what comes of these, but we're also looking to see how you can have impact beyond one item in terms of the connections that you're making, the network that you're building, and the mutual exchange pieces that might be a little bit less tangible than a scholarly journal. So, is there an exam required, and what are the applicant's requirements for a TESOL award? So, if this is a question about language proficiency, that's going to depend on the country and the language requirement. We don't have any specific award, exam requirements. So just look at the language proficiency. Some of them do have an external report, but that just means to fill out a form by a professional in that language. So there's a question here about what a distinguished chair is. So again, we'll go back to the catalog of awards so that we can show you what the differences are in the types of awards. So generally, we have three types. It's going to be research, teaching, and research combined, or teaching only. So if we go to, for example, Canada, we're going to filter by Canada only on the left. So country area. We can search awards. Canada has a lot of awards. And so you'll see here specifically we'll have an all disciplines, a distinguished research chair, a postdoc award, research chairs in business and economics, etc. So each of these awards is going to have different requirements. So, for example, we can look at the distinguished research chair at Carleton University. And essentially what this means is that this is going to be for applicants who have more experience. And Canada is unique in the sense that they pre-identify many of the host institutions for you. So they give you a place to start, which is really wonderful, especially when you can feel a little bit overwhelmed in searching for a host institution. So this distinguished chair says that a PhD or other terminal degree is required. And it's open to academics and appropriately qualified professionals outside of academia, but it's not available for early career postdocs since there are specific awards for those kinds of applicants. So that's just really what that means. It's a little bit higher level. It's for more experienced candidates. And then we have the research chairs, and these are going to be at specific universities. So, for example, the research chair in the arts, humanities, and culture. If you see here, they have listed a number of different universities, McMaster University, University of Alberta, Calgary, Guelph, etc., and they note the different specializations that you would be working in these institutions. So, on the right-hand side, you'll see that the activity is research or teaching research, and then it'll show you the degree requirements, PhD or other terminal degree. So again, look at the catalog of awards. There's a ton of information here, and it can be confusing, so you'll see the email there as well. Under program stuff, you'll see my name, a phone number, and then the email address. Reach out with any questions about specifics or points of confusion, and I'm myself and our team here are really happy to help answer the questions so that you can put forth the strongest application possible. So let's see, there's a few more questions here. Um, Will an applicant be considered for a teaching research award without teaching experience, even though they have a lot of research experience and are able to come up with strong teaching application materials, such as a syllabus or curriculum? So again, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but look at the catalog of awards. They'll indicate whether there's a preference for teaching experience or a number of years, or where there is an absolute requirement. So that's really going to guide you in the way that you want to go with your proposal. So if it's a requirement, then I would encourage you to not apply for that one, because that could deem you ineligible pretty early on. And so you really want to match your expertise and your experience to what the catalog of awards requests. So there are a few questions about the disciplines available. So there's a question about whether there's any grants in the fashion discipline or faith-based, theological, theater, film. And so I don't know these off the top of my head because we have such a plethora of awards available to you. But if you go to the catalog, you can filter, and we can show you an example as well. You can search by discipline on the left-hand side. So we can go, you can select all of the different disciplines, art, art history, creative writing, etc. And so these will, what will happen is that this will filter all of the awards and you can select, so you'll want to be careful. The filters can be a little tricky. They are super helpful, but if you don't select a region, and you just select a discipline, we're having some issues here with the website. So sometimes it does this and you just want to restart, you just go to the new, just go to the link again, so awards.cis, and it'll allow you to select. Anyhow, so you can go through and you can look at all of the different awards. If there isn't in the drop-down menu a checkbox for your discipline, at the very bottom, if you scroll all the way down, then you can go and search just by any discipline that you want, or any keywords, essentially. So let me see if I can get our website to work. Give me just one. All right, so we're at the homepage again. So what we can do is go to the advanced search, and this will bring you to the filters. So again, anything is available. So you can search by discipline here, and you can literally click any of the options that you want, and it'll show religious studies with a question, and even other. So if you click search awards with just the discipline, it's going to come up with all of the awards in all of the world. Since this is a West Ham specific, we're going to select the region with those disciplines. So now we have 16 awards in different areas based on the disciplines that I selected. So another way to do this, instead of selecting these, you can search for just a keyword generally. So let me uncheck all of these, and you can go. Keyword is at the top. So if you want to search for Indigenous studies, for example. It's going to pull a keyword, and it'll show you all of the awards that might have the word Indigenous studies in it. So here, and again, we're still filtering for the West Ham, so it's only going to show Indigenous Studies awards in the Western Hemisphere. So it shows you here the all disciplines in Honduras, Trinidad and Tobago, and Brazil all have mentioned in their award something related to Indigenous. So I'll go into the Honduras one, and you'll see applications are sought in all appropriate disciplines, but applications in the following disciplines are preferred. So this is indicating a preference, and there are a lot. So you can look here to see what kinds of projects or disciplines that the host country is looking for. So I would encourage you to do that. Also, notably, if you are interested in Indigenous Studies, there is a specific one at in Canada that's based on Indigenous Studies only. So this one you would not want to apply if you had any other interest for this, but it's a really interesting award that I would encourage you to apply to if you do have expertise in Indigenous Studies. All right, so we have about 8 minutes left, so we'll go through a few more questions. Let's see what else we have. So can you tell us the kinds of scholars who benefit from Fulbright? It's a big investment for those of us with families, so it's good to understand how it benefits the individual academic. So I would say that Fulbright really benefits anybody who is able to participate in the program, and we encourage anyone who is qualified and has the expertise to participate in it. We do have some flexibility in providing dependent benefits. Lots of our scholars bring their families abroad, and they find that that is actually a really wonderful opportunity for their spouses, for their children, any of their dependents. It's a really kind of an adventure for everybody to go abroad if that's possible for you. It's going to be a really great, I mean, Fulbright's prestige is very well known, and so it's going to give you the professional advancement and ability to step back outside of your daily responsibilities and really do research or teach and focus on one specific area that you may not have had the opportunity to in your day-to-day. So those are just a few of the benefits, and like I was speaking to earlier, there are just a number of really intangible benefits that come from the mutual exchange, from experiencing life in another country, and from developing these networks that often, more often than not, really last far beyond the length of your 3 to 9 month program. So there's a question here about the percent of successful applications. I don't know that number off the top of my head, but also we don't share those numbers because there's so much variance year to year, award to award. There's really not a way to necessarily capture that data in a way that would be helpful for applicants. So we just encourage you, if you are interested in your expertise and your profile matches what the catalog of award lays out, to apply. And you'll always be, it's better to put your application forth and really give it a shot than not. It is competitive, but it does depend on the country, on the specific award, et cetera. So in the last 5 minutes, can one defer an award if the timing doesn't work? So the answer to this is no. You must, so deferrals are not permitted per FFSB policy. That's the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board that sets all of the policies for the Fulbright program. If you apply for the 2020-2021 year, you must begin in 2021 at the very latest. If you cannot, you would unfortunately have to decline the award, and we would encourage you to reapply. So if you don't think that the timing will work out now, I encourage you to maybe apply in future years. But there's a lot of time between now and next May, essentially a year from now, for you to be able to kind of figure out how you can shuffle around your responsibilities to allow you to participate in the program should you be selected. All right, so there is a question. Do we apply for a specific grant, or do we submit an application and the committee decides which is the best fit? So this is a really good question, and the strongest applications we have found put forth a specific award, a specific project. The specificity is valued, absolutely. The review committee is really looking to see whether you are a good fit for the program, whether your project statement is going to be feasible, what kind of impact it will have. Their job is not to look at where you would be a best fit. So definitely do all of the research beforehand and put forth a really strong proposal that answers all of those questions. I have 20 years of teaching experience. I'm currently finishing up my PhD in education. I'll finish December 2019. Can I apply now for grants that require a PhD? So I would encourage you to please, this is a very specific question, so go ahead and email us, and we can set up a time to chat and discuss more what would be a good fit and your eligibility for this program. So are stipends paid in lump sum in advance or part by part? So this is a pretty logistical question, but the payments are going to depend on whether you are going to a Fulbright Commission country or an embassy country. The majority are embassy countries that don't have Fulbright Commissions, but they're given in lump sums of 3 months at a time. So if your program is 3 months or 4 months, you'll probably receive all of it at once. But if you have a 9-month program, you'll be receiving it in 3-month installments. So there's a question about funding. Is it true that the host country's government must partially fund the award? And therefore, should I stray away from developing nations that may not be well positioned to fund such an award? So a lot of this is what we would call a cost share. And there are instances in which country governments help fund the award. That's not the case for many of our countries. So that's generally going to be the case for the larger ones, Canada, Colombia, I believe Brazil as well. So Honduras. And this isn't a requirement. This is more of a way for those countries to be able to bring additional scholars than what our budget from the State Department may provide. So I wouldn't allow this to play into your decision of where to go necessarily, because the funding is there. So in the catalog of awards, it does show how many grants are available per award. And so in some of the Canada ones, you'll see that it says up to 30. Honduras, it'll say 1 to 2. So you want to look at that, but that shouldn't have a bearing on whether it's a developing country or not on your decision. Should the teaching always be at the tertiary level as opposed to K-12? Again, this is going to depend on the catalog of awards and their preferences. I think it's going to depend, because if you are applying for a TEFL award, for example, then I believe that any teaching is going to apply. If you are applying for a teaching award that is going to be for graduate students, then your experience is probably going to be most relevant if it is at the tertiary level. So again, you want to look at those sorts of instances. If you have further questions about your specific situation, definitely reach out to us, please. All right, and I think we have time for one more question, and then we are at time, and I will let you all get to the rest of your days. So is there a typical expectation from the host institution? Are there norms about teaching, lecturing? Are these spelled out on the application? So this is a really good question about expectations from the host institution, and this is really driven by your conversations with the host institution. So the way we recommend you go about it is that you approach them with an idea of what you propose to do in the country, and then start a conversation about how you can best contribute to the host institution, how they can help you achieve your goals, etc. And you really kind of decide that, and those sorts of details should go into the letter of invitation. So in short, it's really up to you and the host institution as to how this would benefit your program. So that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you, everyone, for the really wonderful questions. This webinar was recorded, and we will be sending out a PowerPoint, the PowerPoint that we've shown on this presentation, and we'll also archive the recording of this and put it on our website. So everything will be accessible for you to go through again, and I will just say one more time, read the catalog of awards, go through, use the filters, use the U.S. Scholar Directory to find alumni that can help you answer any of your questions. And then we're always here to talk through anything else that you may have questions about. So email, call, set up a call with me. And we look forward to receiving your applications. Have a great afternoon, everyone.